Now in this dream I told you, this alchemical dream in the Sufi group, the metal dust is spread over the sheet 5 times. And one of the basic things of the Sufi path is living in the world, is living one's highest aspiration in the marketplace, in whatever profession you have, or if you don't have a profession, it doesn't matter. That is one of the basic principles of the Sufi path, is you live out whatever is deepest to you in the most ordinary surroundings of your life. And it doesn't have to be special. You make it special by adding your own dream to it. And that has, if you knew what effect that has on your environment, it allows, it actually feeds life around you, very mysteriously, very invisibly. It permeates into life around you. And I say, in the Sufi path, it's very important. We don't retire from the world, we don't go to a monastery. We have a job, we bring up children. And in the midst of that, we realize God. The more life crowds around you, paradoxically, the more potential there is for transformation. Our teacher Baisarpi said somewhere, the greater the limitation, the greater the perfection afterwards. You know, it's easy, you go in the Himalayas and all you can think of is God, that's easy, but to do it, you know, in the subway, and the on the way to the office, in the office, sitting in front of a computer screen, now that's something else, that's a real challenge. And in doing so, you embrace the greatest polarity you have within you, that you are both divine and you are both an ordinary human being. And that is something, again, terribly simple you'd overlook, but so profound. It's like, again, it goes back to the fact that you begin the spiritual path with the paradox, or the seeming paradox, that it's the faults, your faults, that help you to realize God. The woman who saw the green star with the words alchemy written on it, it began with her own cruelty. That was her access to her inner self. Strange. So in this dream, the silver is spread 5 times and then molded from above and below. And this image is the same transformation. It is molded by the grace of God from above and the experience of the world from below. They are actually vital. Because again, it's the paradox, they say, that the Sufi, one of the most important Sufi sayings is, he who has realized his humanness has simultaneously realized his godliness. If you realize what you are as an ordinary human being, you have at the same time realized what you are as a divine spark. And somewhere we are so beautiful. I was once shown for a moment, I don't think one can see it for a moment, I was in a hospital at the time, in the grounds of a hospital, and there was a doorway, a gate. I wasn't very well and I was going for a walk. And outside the hospital gate there were some school children that were being taken, I don't know, for a walk or something. I guess they were aged 8 or 9. And I was shown for a moment what they really are. And each one of those children, where the heart is in the child, there was the most amazing blazing light like a sun. They were just ordinary kids going on a school trip. And I looked and each one of those children was so radiant. They were, well, like a sun. We are somewhere, we are stars. That's actually also in this dream of alchemy, when she saw the star. The star is herself. Somewhere we are such radiant stars. It stayed with me. I saw it for maybe 2 or 3 seconds. It was so powerful. If I'd seen it for longer, I probably would have ended up with my mind totally blown out for the rest of my life. And that's what we are somewhere. And the beauty of it, we have that in our own ordinariness. We are not special. When you realize things deep within yourself, you realize the beauty of your own ordinariness. Again, it's a paradox. Your incredible individuality is also part of your own. You're just another human being walking along this path that leads home. And sometimes along that path you have a glimpse of what you really are, which is the end of the journey. Somebody shared with us last Saturday. They were shown in a dream the truth of themselves, which was like a grain of sand that contained the whole universe, and in that moment they knew. They didn't know anything, they knew. They knew it all in that moment, and the knowledge was contained within the grain of sand that contained the whole universe. Blake had the same experience when he said to see the world in a grain of sand. But she saw the whole universe. It was shown to her for a moment. We are given those experiences as we go along the path, if we are sincere, as reminders, as pointers to say, yes, this is what you really are. And if you walk sincerely, you will eventually find that. And it's within all of us. All of us. We're all like that somewhere. These school children, they were just school children, but gosh. You know? So the whole alchemical process, we have the stages. The nigredo, the albedo, the whitening, the rubedo, the reddening when we live it. And in this dream there was a rough bowl. And then it was polished and polished till it shines. There's a lovely Sufi expression called polishing the mirror of the heart. And what one does is the inner work is one just polishes and polishes and polishes. And polishes and polishes and polishes. And polishes and polishes and polishes. That's... And one doesn't really do it for oneself. That's also the beauty. I think that's why, for me, if you like, on a spiritual path, the psychological work is up an octave. There is the psychological work, yes, but it's like you do it one octave up. And why? Because you don't do it for yourself. You do it for the beloved. You do it for however you like to call it, the absolute truth. Sufis love the term the beloved because Sufism is a love affair. You know, and to do it for the beloved, oh, you do anything for somebody you really love. And so you work on yourself, not for yourself, but as an offering. You do it for the beloved. You polish and polish and polish. Till it shines. The heart is a mirror which the wayfarer polishes and polishes with aspiration and longing until no imperfection remains. Actually, some imperfection always remains because we're human. That's the way we are. Then the mirror of the heart can reflect the true light of the beloved. What then happens is your life just becomes a reflection. You reflect. Actually, the beauty of it is you reflect back other people's light to them. You reflect back their own deepest aspiration. Not by saying anything, just by being yourself. And it doesn't even matter if other people don't know. You can be a greengrocer in a shop, and people will get more than the oranges. They'll get something else beside the fruit and the vegetables they bought, and they won't know it. Because it permeates. True spirituality is actually very catching because people are so hungry, they want it. They need it. But not with the mind. I'm not really talking to your minds here. Maybe your minds have even gone to sleep, it doesn't matter. You talk to the heart and you say, yes, that's what really matters. And your hearts listen, because that's where we really communicate as human beings. We don't communicate through words. Words can only, how much can you can say with yourself with words? How much of yourself can you share with words? But with your heart, when heart speaks to heart and heart hears heart, there's something. And if you work on yourself, then eventually the heart just becomes a mirror in which he becomes reflected. There's a lovely quotation by Jami. Whether your lot be glory or disgrace, be pure of both hatred and love of self. Polish your mirror, and perhaps that sublime beauty from the regions of mystery will shine in your breast, just as it did for the prophets. And then, with your heart illumined by that splendor, the secret of the beloved will no longer be concealed from you. Rumi wrote somewhere, between the mirror and the heart is this single difference. The heart conceals secrets while the mirror does not. And that's really the end of the journey, the end of the alchemical process, is to find the secret that you always had. Because we're born with this secret. And sometimes it's a very painful secret to carry if nobody hears, if nobody listens. To know that what for you is the most precious thing is dismissed and rejected. That, I think, for those on the spiritual path is one of the most painful crosses to bear. And you bear it in silence without even knowing you bear it. Jung said somewhere that a human being cannot live without a secret. And for those on the spiritual path, we have the greatest secret. That in our hearts we have a secret lover who has always been there. And we carry this. Sometimes you walk in the street and he's just there, just for a moment. He's in your heart. It can be anywhere. It can be in the supermarket. It can be just before you go to sleep. Or it can be in your dream. Suddenly your own secret is there in your heart. How it came there you don't know. Where it came from you don't know. And the more you work on yourself, so the more you get to know your secret. And the more you get to know your secret, so it also recedes and recedes. Because it's a mystery. Because your real self is such a mystery. It is so indefinable, intangible, and well, like a secret. You can never define a secret, otherwise it wouldn't be a secret. And the final mystery of the journey is that in the mirror of your heart, what you see is not some wonderful God, you see yourself. In the Conference of the Birds, which is a great Sufi text of the journey, when the 30 birds who had survived the journey asked their king and goal, the Simurgh, who was their guide, to reveal to them the secret of the unity and plurality of beings, the Simurgh made this reply, "The sun of my majesty is a mirror. He who sees himself therein sees his soul and his body, and sees them completely. Since you have come as 30 birds, Simurgh, you will see 30 birds in this mirror. If 40 or 50 were come, it would be the same. Although you were completely changed, you see yourselves as you were before. You see your own ordinary, everyday self, but the secret is you see it with the eyes of God. And your own ordinary everyday self, seen with the eyes of God." That is something. You don't see anything else. ever. You just see your own simple humanness. But it's a humanness that contains everything in the universe, everything. And it contains the seed of the mystery of the universe. And it's terribly simple. And you can never even know it or understand it with the mind at all, so I should stop talking. We just go into our hearts for a moment, just to stay with our own secret, our own intimate secret. There is nothing more intimate. Somewhere Rumi said, it is intimate beyond belief. That's why often the middle of the night is the best time. We just stay with our secret and let our secret speak to us. Yeah.
I had a dream of a black figure. It's so black there are no really features. And she wraps my heart in lead foil, and she wraps it so tightly that it bleeds.
Great.
Sounds
like one of the it's really beginning. You've got the lead, you've got the McGregor. That's the start. The very, one of the most important things is the beginning. You know, and one begins and begins and begins, because it's not like a, you know, the alchemical process isn't, you know, stage one and stage two. You know, it's stage one, stage two, then you go back to stage one, then maybe it's stage three, and then it's stage, you know, and you begin again with this bit. And then, but it's a very substantial dream. You know, it's all there. The black, the lead, the heart, the bleeding. You know, I mean, what more can you want?
A little less pain, maybe. But that's part of it, too.
Like when Bysaf said to Mrs. Tweedy, you came, she was complaining about something, about suffering, and he said quite simply, you came here to suffer, so suffer. Yeah.
I had a dream recently. The very vivid thing about it was the colours. I was actually sailing. It was a stormy day, stormy night. It was a day, so it was not a dream. And the colours of the waves were just, I'd never had colours this strong in the dream before. Like a deep bluey green, like a Caribbean color. Just wondered what the.
Are you getting in touch with your feelings more?
Yeah, a lot more in here.
Well, that's the colour. See, like I was saying, the colour, the richness of life comes from within. All those feelings that you kept bottled up. But once they come into your life, then your life becomes more colourful. They have the colour. It never comes from outside. Everything comes from inside. So, great. Water is feelings, that's why. Water is emotion, feelings. Yeah.
I had a dream the other night where I answer the door, and Gwen is standing there with a dark figure, a large man with a very dark, heavy, rough tweed coat, and he actually looks a lot like this fellow here without his beard, but much bigger, in face shape and black hair on his head. And she's introducing the person to me, just a regular formal introduction. And I stick up my hand to shake his hand and say, "Welcome, come in." And he just stands there and looks stony at me. And I see that his coat doesn't have a sleeve, like a cape. And Gwen explains that he can't shake because he doesn't have a right arm. And so they come in, and that's pretty much what I remember of it. This dark figure in my dream is missing his right arm.
State inside you, so he's a shadow part of you which is still asking for some recognition of which you're not yet conscious, and he also represents a part of you which you're not living out in the world, in the conscious life. So he might be an extremely positive force if you get to know him a bit better.
I remember inviting him in and taking his coat, by the way.
Sometimes I get a sense that I've kind of heard people say, this is a dream, and it has both good and bad elements. And I was wondering what your tradition might suggest for a way to integrate the fact that we have these spiritual traditions and we also have the shadow existing in this dimension at the same time of people like the power. Perspective that you are coming from say about how to integrate these two different dream worlds that exist in this dimension.
I think.
Are you talking about the inner world, or are you talking about the outer world?
Well, as if the outer world was an expression of our shadow as a dream world. So I'm accepting that they're both, it's an internal state that maybe is projected and we have to deal with it in some way.
I mean, I would say you begin where you are. You know, if life brings you something, you deal with it. If you, of course, feel a calling to go and work with Mother Teresa, that's an inner thing to follow. Otherwise, my feeling is, you know, you do what life brings to you, and what life brings out of your unconscious. That's usually enough for most of us. And I think if we all did that, if we all really just focused on what we have to do and did it to the best of our abilities, that would change the world quite extraordinarily. But that's my point of view. Yeah,
I had a question about the suffering. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, it seems like we're so attached to our suffering that it's the point is to get to detach from it. So I was wondering, I understand the part about living, but do you feel that we need to suffer?
I give you a lovely quotation, if I can find it. This is by somebody called Abu Sa'id Karaz, a Sufi. Whoever thinks that one may achieve something without suffering is wishful, while one who believes that one must suffer to achieve makes trouble for himself.
Very wise, you see.
A male child with me to go amongst the natives. They lie on blankets in the street, signs of depravity and harsh poverty, and they're aggressive, and I fear for my life. I cling to the child, but he seems to assure my safe passage. The people are scantily clad, ill, sore, some making love, sort of a horrid mix of poor people and trying to survive. They have nothing and nothing to do. My original group seems caught up with their studies, alien to the miseries of the land, and I think to myself, the next time I'll vacation in a place where I don't have to fear for my safety.
What does it mean to you?
Well, I felt that that the male child might be my animus, the male part of me, that is trying to help me stay focused as I walk among the parts of me that I discarded, the needy parts of me that were on this blanket. I'm not sure who the other women were who seemed to be able to do other things and stay detached.
Intellectualize it? Could there be parts of you that were intellectualizing the process?
That's possible. Right.
I mean, I wonder if the child, as you say, it's your animus. I mean, a child is often also the future. The aspiration for the future.
He did seem to be the guide. I seem fairly panicked, and he, as a child, seemed to be not fearful.
So you know what to do. Your child knows what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Listen to the child.
Listen to the child. It is there. What the dream actually says is you have already made contact with your higher self. And your higher self is there, prepared to guide you where you need to go. Which is a very important stage to have reached. Yeah? So I would stay focused on what the child means to you. What is most important in your life? Stay with it. What is most important in your life? Say it.
I guess finding the beloved. What does that mean?
And that is the child.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's found you, actually. It isn't really that you find it. It finds you. And then it takes you back home. So it means you will know what to do in every circumstance you encounter, if you listen. It's a very precious dream. Thank you for sharing it.
Can you speak up a little?
You talked about several dreams where you gathered the black dust and put it on the sheet of white paper. Black
mm-hmm.
And you translate that into your own journey or your own processes. I can very much see where the black parts of myself are. How do you, at the same time, hold on to that in a conscious way and achieve the purification of the white sheet of paper?
So the question is really, there is the black dust on the white sheet of paper, and the white is one's own purification, and the black dust is one's shadow.
I mean, you never are purified, but you try, and little bits of you are purified. I don't think if there wasn't a pure bit in you, you would ever begin to work on the shadow, because you would be in the shadow. And as you work more and accept more, so there is more space within you. There is more. It's often in dreams, it's an empty space. It's like, you know, your house is full of rubbish and you clear it out and there's an empty space, because white is no colour. White is emptiness, isn't it? All colours. So black is right. Black is no colour. White is all colours. So white contains everything. So you create more space for yourself. And it's the relationship of the darkness and the light to hold them within you, to hold those opposites within you all the time. And slowly there gets more white, more light, and less darkness. But it's the relationship of the two. You hold them within you. I mean, your aspiration is in a way the white sheet. You're longing to perfect yourself. And you hold that in relationship to your shadow and work with it. I mean, that's what I would say. I don't know if anybody else has another comment, how they feel about it. I mean, purification is a slightly I'm not entirely happy with it as a word. I prefer polishing, you know, it's nicer, but thank you. Yeah. And I don't think it needs any interpretation, does it?
No, it's pretty straightforward.
It's wonderful.
But you could interpret. I would like to.
There's nothing. It's exactly what it says it is. Mm-hmm. It's a process of cleansing.
I like the high technology, though.
Yeah.
You've obviously moved into the 21st century with your inner alchemical process. We are zapping it.
I remember in one dream that I had, I was given this implement, which was, I was in a very deep cave, and the River Thames was flowing above the cave, and off the cave there were all these rooms, huge doorways into the rooms. And I looked into one of the rooms, and it obviously hadn't been open for thousands of years, and it was covered in cobwebs and all the sorts of things you'd expect to find in a room that, or a cave that hadn't been open for a long time. And I was given this implement to test the structural soundness of the cave, and it was a pruning shears for apple trees on a long stick that you chop the, you pull at this end and it cuts at the other end. And so I test the cave, and that seemed to be okay. And the next thing that I realized was that that this particular implement also had another function, and that is that it could vaporize dog shit. So I could use it to clean out the caves. It's a bit like the laser, isn't it?
That is basic.
Maybe not.
That's a slightly more aesthetic, don't you think?
Yes, I think yours is a little more aesthetic.
Yes.
Yeah, I had this dream that I was sleeping and somebody was coming into the room, and it was this really oppressive feeling. I was really fearful. There was a man coming into my bed. And then suddenly I realized who it was. It was this friend of mine. I said, oh, it's only George. But that moment, the room took on this very golden color. And I woke up, and then with that I felt at peace. And then it was like I woke up, and I looked outside the window. And I live in this little creepy room, there is no sunshine coming in, and I thought, well, maybe there is, so it was like I was awake, and I thought, well, maybe it's a fire outside or something, you know, or something is happening in the sky, because it was still this very golden light that was coming in, and then, I don't know, that's all I remember. But it was like I was awake, but I wasn't awake, I suppose.
Well, you were awake, all right.
Yeah.
What does George mean to you?
Well, at that time, I did have an affair with this person, you know, which changed my life at that particular moment in my life. It wasn't a sexual dream, though.
No, I didn't know.
It was more
it's
like
a soul dream.
Yeah. So, but I don't understand it.
But you said it changed your life.
Yes, but I but that was different.
What do you mean that was different?
Because the dream didn't seem to have anything to do with the person except with my fear, I suppose. Yes, my fear of relationships, maybe that's what I want. The changes.
Do you want to know what the dream means? Really?
Well, okay.
You're not quite sure. What?
I'm a beginner at dreams, but I rarely dream. I mean, remembering my dreams.
But obviously George is something very precious to you, that awoke something very precious inside of you.
Mm-hmm.
And your dream was trying to say to you, this is not something else. This is the mystery of your own soul. And it even made the whole room golden just to show you that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't dismiss it. You see, spiritual things are rarely what we think spiritual things should be. Very rarely. Because if we think something is something, it's usually not spiritual. The spiritual is other than thought, other than ideas, other than concepts. Spiritual is a real living experience. And somewhere, whatever George means to you, touched upon something very deep inside of you, and probably very human inside of you.
Yeah, because that's a part of me, in a way, I've been trying to get in touch with this, to, you know, find some more meaningful existence for me in this world, in the sense of more than just material things.
Mm-hmm.
So. So I shouldn't be afraid, in other words, my spiritual part, is that what it's saying?
Yes.
But also hold the color. Just hold the color. Mm-hmm. Don't think about it or intellectualize it away. Just hold the color.
There was a lovely incident about, I gave a lecture once in Germany about the story of Mushka Gusha, which is a Sufi story. And Mushka Gusha is a figure, an archetypal figure, is the remover of all obstacles. Very useful figure. And somebody was there who was attending the lecture, and it touched her. She didn't speak very good English. She was from Hungary or Poland, I can't remember. And she wasn't quite sure exactly, although it touched her, she wasn't sure exactly the meaning of the story of Mushka Gusha. And the next morning she was in a chapel, the way the conference was. There was a little chapel there nearby. And as she was in the chapel, she suddenly saw the whole of the chapel was filled with vermilion light. Filled with vermilion light. And the moment, and then she thought, this can't be for me. And the moment she thought that, it all went. Yeah? So it was for you. Yeah.
Well, if this were my dream, I went back a little farther and listened to her say that she had fear of the shadow. And found that it was
oh, it's okay, it's only George. Everything is okay. My better.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes?
I had a dream a couple nights ago. I was at an airport and two friends from law school many years ago showed up at the airport. And they gave me this duck to carry, and whatever the exchange was, I was going on a trip where I went to many places. It was one of those very busy trips, and that I had to carry this duck. And I was saying, no, you know, I can't carry this duck in a suitcase on this trip. That doesn't make any sense. But there was an insistence. But I was resistant to it. It didn't make sense. Anyway, so I went on this trip, and the duck was in the bottom of my suitcase the whole time. As I've been thinking about this during the last 2 days, I realized that I never thought about taking out. But it was almost like it wasn't to be taken out. There was some unspoken thing. It was just supposed to travel, but I knew that it just wouldn't work. So I went on this trip and went round and round, and then got back to the airport, and there they were, and they said, well, now let's see the duck. And I knew that the duck would be dead because it had been in the bottom of this bag, like suitcase, this whole time. And what was strange is that when it was a couple, and the man, when we went to open the bag, I said at the moment that it would be dead, and he said it dead. He said that word at the same moment, and I saw this dead duck. And like that, I can still see. Now that moment of seeing it, I can still see. And I played with the dream and sort of found some insight about it, but I wondered if you would comment on particularly the duck, if that has any symbolic meaning.
What does it mean to you?
Well, I figured you were going to ask that question. So I've been thinking, well, I've gotten around to other things and said, but what is the duck? And I can't come up with a relationship, an association with.
No association with the duck?
With the duck. I guess, what now comes to mind is the ugly duckling and the swan. He said, yeah, but you got a dead duck.
if this were my suitcase, I may have gotten something else out of the suitcase besides the dead duck.
But was the duck dead?
Yeah, the duck was dead. But I knew it would be dead because it had never been out.
Did you see anything else in the suitcase?
No, in fact, it wasn't a regular suitcase. It was like a nylon big bag, almost that like you used for sleeping bags.
So what are you carrying around that's a dead duck?
Yeah.
Being pushed on
other people. Mm-hmm. Well, that was the other part.
Pardon me?
What does law school mean to you? What do these friends from law school mean to you?
Well, the funny thing about them is that they years ago showed up in a dream also and brought to me were holding this baby in a christening gown, but there was no face on the baby. Yeah. It's one of the few dreams I remember. And I was surprised that it was them, you know, but I can see this baby in this basement, but no, just like a white face. Law school to me was, law school itself is where my conscious spiritual path, where I met somebody and that awakened me to my conscious spiritual path. Practicing law all these years has been very oppressive for me. Mm-hmm. So I had to
answer. So it's time you live out your spirituality. And there's the potential there to do it. And don't be an ugly duckling, be a swan. What I was talking about this evening.
I'm sorry.
Is what I was talking about this evening. There comes a time when you have to live it out. Otherwise, you kill it.
Well, that's what I'm in the process of doing.
Of killing it?
No, I've been giving up on practice.
Oh, it doesn't mean giving up your practice. Never confuse the outer with the inner. It means living out your spirituality. Right? Mean it. It's a very serious dream.
Is it that I didn't bring it out that it died?
Yeah, if you brought it out, it would have been a swan.
Yeah.